So yes, my name is Lotta Kokkonen. I work at the Center for Multilingual Academic Communication. It used to be called the Language Center. So most of my colleagues still provide language courses in different languages, but because we also do a lot of pedagogical development and we teach also communication quite largely, the name was changed into this, what it is today, because we also do research. And my job is basically to enhance the... And it's a huge, huge, huge title that I have. It's the internationalization in degrees. So I'm supposed to help each and every one at the University of Jyväskylä to enhance your internationalization, whatever that means. What I sort of do in practice, I teach a lot of courses in intercultural communication. Then I do workshops like this. I also do research, so what we are interested in, what students can actually learn and enhance within a short amount of time in terms of multilingual and intercultural competence. And then we also work with a team of teachers and scholars who try to introduce the idea of internationalization plan for their bachelor students, so that at the beginning of their studies, they would kind of stop and think, what does this mean to me? You know, what are the requirements of contemporary studying life and work life that I need in terms of intercultural communication? And since you are not bachelor-level students anymore, you are master-level students, it's the workshops like this when we get a chance to actually stop and think critically what is required and what you can actually enhance during your studies. So the aims of this workshop is to orient you to study in diverse work groups. I know that there is the situation, as we just spoke briefly, is that many of the international master programs actually contain 90% of Finnish students. Do you see this as a problem? I hope not. Because then later we will ask the question, what is international anyway? Does it mean that if we have an international master program and we have, you know, mix of students coming from overseas and then Finland, that's international. But if all the students have Finnish passports, it's not international. Thus, those students are not international. I don't think so. But yeah, so help you to work in diverse work groups. When we talk about culture in MOVI, we define it very broadly. So it's not only the culture of education in Finland or culture of a particular country. In fact, that sort of critical school in intercultural communication is questioning the concept of a national culture as an explanation of an individual's behavior. We'll come back to this a bit later. But we also talk about discipline culture. So if you are now studying in a master program where students come from different backgrounds, what is the program that you are studying? Okay, corporate environment management. And your background is in, where did you do your?
Environmental sciences.
Anybody else studying in the same program? Okay, what is your background? Yes. See, already different. Well, what about you? Yeah, business as well. Yep. Environmental sciences. So, okay, we already have people from very different backgrounds working together. So already that can be considered as a, you know, in your business school, you had a particular kind of culture, or in your environmental studies, you know, some of, you know, values or ways the perceive the world could be then constructed within that environment. So we can also talk about family cultures. I think the most critical intercultural negotiations take place in families when you negotiate on how to celebrate Christmas or another holiday.
In my family, real Christmas, it's all about lots of presents and a huge family. And we have to have kinkku and we have to have this and that. And no, in my family, we never did that. So
what is then the creation of what is valued and what is not? All right, so what I would like you to be sort of after this workshop is that you have reflected some of your own expectations and your goals, since it is an advantage that you are studying an international program. as you have an opportunity to establish social networks that give you the kind of advantage than students who study in more geographically condensed programs. And then focus on the competencies that you can enhance, and you probably already have, but sort of look at a little bit what could be achieved through a studying in a diverse environment. Okay, so the title of the workshop is Multicultural Skills, what we're going to do today is we're going to practice a little bit of skills. So we're going to be doing stuff. But in addition to that, I would like to enhance that when we're talking about competence, it's not only about skills. There's also motivation and knowledge. So I'm going to throw you in a bit of theory, and I hope that that's okay. After all, it's a university. And all the things that I do say is based on research. So there are a lot of models, for example, on competence. Global competencies is a concept that probably some of you have heard, often used and applied in contexts where the background theory is lost or does not exist. And what I want to focus is that things that we do and say are based on some sort of research. Okay, before we go into this, I would like to sort of activate you a little bit. I know it's afternoon. Thank God it's not Friday. But what do you think? What is required for you to study in an international master program? So what are the requirements? If you compare it to that you would have applied to a sort of regular master program in your home country or where you from, what is needed? Language, yes. What languages? Yes. How many of you are expecting that your English is going to be better after the 2 years of studying at university? Good. Be also prepared to the fact that your English, particularly the spoken English, can actually be better in terms of multilingual communication, not necessarily viewed from a native perspective. So the native perspective, which we often learn at school, is expecting you to sound more like a British English. Right, and in this academic context, we would like to... You know what I'm talking about? How you learn what is a good English, okay? So in an academic writing, yes, you will be learning the academic rules and regulations and blah, 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 whatnot. But in your spoken communication, I'm really hoping that you do not develop a better British accent or American accent, any of that. But what I would like you to develop is how you can simplify your language, how you can rephrase things, and how you can actually listen to different dialects, different ways of using English. What else? What else? What do you need? Okay, why? What do you mean about other cultures? Sorry, and this is also a pedagogical thing that I often ask questions, not meaning that you were wrong or I want to, but because I think one of the things that we have to learn is to criticize and question, also question myself. So I'm asking a lot of these stupid questions. Why? What do you mean? So yes, going back to how... Yeah, yeah, yes. So this is the common goal. Often students who come to study in these programs are very curious about, you know, learning from different people, learning from different cultures. What is problematic with that culture, if we see it as a national culture, is that then it kind of makes it exotic. So, you know, going back to the scenario that you're studying in a program where you only have, like, you have 15 Finnish students and then five internationals, then does it make these five more valuable in a sense that, so this is one of the critique that has been addressed to the question of national culture. But yes. How many of you are excited about working with people from different backgrounds, meaning different countries?
I would be.
Yes. So that's one of the things. You're motivated to do this. So what you need is you need motivation to study in an environment like this. Brilliant. Thank you. What else? What else do you need? One more thing and then we can move on. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Why do we need courage? Yes. Because the way we use language, we assume that people also interpret our identities, our, you know, intelligence, our, you know, personalities. And I don't know how many of you have had the situation that when you are using another language, you feel that, I'm not stupid. I'm, you know, I would be so funny if I could just do this with my first language. Any of you? Only some of you. So you always feel comfortable. And you feel that you can express yourself fully. Också på svenska. Men varför inte? No, I'm saying, do you feel comfortable when you speak in Swedish? Okay. Yeah. But have you learned Swedish? Yes. Many years. Yes. So imagine if you were in a situation that you would need to use Swedish in order to meet people. Yeah. So a lot of the people maybe here that use in English is as equivalent to if you would have to use Swedish. Yeah. Maybe to a certain level, because then also you're studying in master program, so you've been screened. So there's a slight difference. But then we also know that a lot of you are very good in writing in English, but then it probably is the first time when you actually use English in a social environment. So that's one thing that you really, really have to understand, that it's also related with power. We'll do an exercise later related with that. So how to use power, how to equalize the power within your teams and groups, regardless of the language competencies that you guys have. Excellent. Thank you very much. So yes, these all are needed. How then what is the competence that we are talking about? So often we want to define concepts. So in MOVI, we say that it's interpretation. So it doesn't matter how competent you are. You know, even if your language skills were perfect and you would be really open-minded and motivated and all that, but if the other people in that situation do not perceive you as competent, the competence doesn't exist. So this is a very different perspective to a, for example, traditional language learning, where you can be measured, your language skills can be measured, and it's your skill. Whereas, regardless of your, you know, grade in English, some people can still consider that you're very inappropriate, for example, in a given situation, or incompetent, even if. So there's a difference in the approach. Okay, it's situational and contextual. What is appropriate here might not be appropriate in another context. How many of you are playing group sports like football, ice hockey, handball, volleyball? Some of you. Okay. Can I ask you what is your sport? Okay, so you used to play ice hockey. If you can now, in your memories, go back to your locker room, you know, when you are putting on your gear and preparing for the game, would you say that the kind of communication that went on in that locker room would be appropriate here? Why not? Yeah. But this is a very good example of how competence is also context related. So had you been speaking like academic English in that locker room, your teammates would have looked at you and thought, you know, he's not okay. And the other way around, if you use the similar kind of language here, which in your context could mean something like, you know, imagine that we play in the same team. What I mean is that I like you and I trust you, but the words that I use could be something quite different. Would you agree? Yes. Yeah. So it's impossible to measure competence because it can be different in different places and different situations. We have to remember that it's not only that you're effective, you get what you want, but it also has the ethical side of communication that you always take into consideration others so that they can also perceive their goals. It's an ethical perspective. And it's a continuous process. We never can't have a fulfilled competence. Unfortunately, we are never always, you know, successful. We always fail. And I think one student last year said it very wisely, and he said that we just have to learn how to fail gracefully. And I think this is a very beautiful idea that, you know, we are all going to fail at some point in communication, in cultural communication. Let's just do it with style and with knowledge that we can, you know, then make things better. All right. Also, we believe that it's skills, but then in addition, it's knowledge and it's motivational factors. So I think this is enough for theory for now, but just to give you the sort of background understanding of how we perceive competence, because I know that there are loads and loads of measuring tools that could, you know, I could measure your intercultural sensitivity, for example, and pay a huge amounts of money to a corporation who does that, the measuring thing, but then you would get a, statement that, you know, your intercultural sensitivity is one scale 1 to 5 on 4. And then you would go like, yeah, so what? And those measuring tools do not take the context into consideration. So you would need to make a different measuring here and then in your ice hockey locker room. You would need to have separate questions for both. Yes. For example, is swearing okay or not? Is it appropriate or not? I'm guessing. I don't know. Maybe you never swore in your ice hockey team. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, how many of you are thinking of a career in international career? Almost everyone. I'm interested in those who did not say that I'm interested in international career, because I don't think that there is any field today that could not be influenced by the international or the global. I think, unfortunately, it is a kind of global processes, as you probably know much better than me, are also influencing every possible business. Education, forest industry, economics, name it. So, as I said, one of the benefits of studying in a program like this is extensive networks. How many of you have heard that you should network? Why? Why do you think you should or we should network? Yes, I'm looking at you. The gentleman, but I can also look at you, so you can also answer. So jobs go through relationships. Yes, also in Finland. even that Finland is set to be the least corrupted country in the world. Yes, but at the same time, we know that jobs go through not your friends, but acquaintances. And why is that? Because your friends often have studied in the same field, so you're kind of competing on the same jobs. But then acquaintances, like someone who works with someone who knows someone, and then through that you get your jobs. Your summer jobs, for example, 90% of them go through relationships. Why else? Why should we network? Yeah. So what we know from research is that innovations, if people, you know, companies and people, if they want to be innovative, they use very, extended networks. You want to work with people from different backgrounds. If you all come from the same education program, you have all read the same books, you have all done the same practices, so you've all done similar things, and that's not very innovative. But having people from different backgrounds help you to be more innovations. Exactly. Creativity. Also, working with people from diverse backgrounds. Informal learning. So if we have extensive networks, we learn more. And in addition to this, we get our jobs through networks. And also, our promotions are down to how extended networks we have in our workplaces. Here is a bit of Finnish for you as well. I'm assuming that you all want to learn Finnish while you're here, to extend your language repertoires, to at least say hey and voi perkele, which are the really most important terms you have to know. And then here's a bit of Finnish. So I took examples from the business world, and we know that social networks help small and medium-sized businesses become international faster. So if you want to become international, you have to have those, networks. And we also know that both strong and weak relationships are important. So strong relationships are those who you have on your phone. So, people who you can call immediately. Weak relationships are those that, my brother knows this person who is doing this somewhere. So that is a weak relationship. I have a connection to him through my brother, but it's not direct contact. But those weak links can be very, very fundamental. Can I get rid of this? Yes. So also what we know is in small companies, it can be just the one person who makes it international. And it's down to this one person to have these extended networks. And now it is your chance to extend your social networks while you are studying in this environment. But there are some challenges to this, and one of them is that, particularly for Finnish local students, making new friends is stressful, not maybe because of the language, but because I already have my friends. I'm actually working at the same time, and I also have these hobbies that I'm doing, so I don't really have time for these studies or for you guys. Sounds familiar? So, trying to remember that this is your chance to really meet people from different backgrounds. As you already said, you guys come from different backgrounds. That is an advantage already there. So you don't have to go somewhere and try to find people from a different field. So if you, if you are interested, there is more research on that. We're going to do a small exercise in a minute, but before we go there, I would also like to remind you that people often think that as long as we study or work in a place where we have people from different backgrounds, sit next to each other on a lecture, we will become more international. But as I've said to all the business school people, when they are trying to think how to become more international, and they say, let's teach more in English. And I'm saying that, do you think that then when you're teaching in English, the internationalization will be absorbed to your students from the air? maybe at least they will get to listen to different accents in English. But what I'm saying is that it's not enough that we sit next to each other on a lecture, which is the contact hypothesis. Often people assume that as long as you work together, you will become more tolerant. There is a, in Helsinki, this is very classic case, is that when, you know, you want to practice, you want to make your children more tolerant towards diversity. You have a program or you have a project, and then you put people with different backgrounds working together. In Helsinki area, in capital area, there was a football team that thought that they want to promote, enhance equality between different groups of people, and they put children with immigrant background and sort of children who've always lived in Finland to play in the same football team, assuming that then they will become more tolerant towards diversity. What happened is that it ended up in a huge conflict between rivalry teams within the team. So it became the international children and the local children, and they were actually really having conflicts with each other to an extent that they became violent. So just spending time with different people doesn't necessarily make you more interculturally competent. It can actually turn the other way around. We also know from research and from other sources that, you know, if you work in an environment like that and you don't have the competencies, you can actually become more intolerant and your stereotypes will become more stronger. So you actually become more prejudiced against people with different backgrounds. And that's why we have to remember that also the contact hypothesis has these four underlying assumptions. Why this is that we'll talk about a little bit about feelings in a minute. But now, let's go. We'll come back to this. But before we do, I'm going to skip a little. Wait. Here. So, stereotypes is one thing that is influencing our communication. So if we have stereotypes about other groups of people. Sorry. I'm going to show you a video about stereotypes. And this is why just sitting next to each other alone doesn't help you to become more tolerant or sort of engage more in cultural competence, is if you have stereotypes about those others. That can influence your communication. And I'm going to show you a video, and I would like you to, after watching the video, is to share some ideas with someone. You know, you can maybe talk together, turn around to someone, share some ideas. What do you think was a message in the video, and what do you think about it? So now I'm just going to show you the video.
You're about to meet Michael. He lives fast as a self-made millionaire.
You didn't have to dress up. It's all right.
You're going to photograph Michael. He's actually saved somebody's life. Michael is an ex-inmate. He's a commercial fisherman. Michael claims to be psychic.
Nice to meet you.
Michael's a former alcoholic. Here's your camera. I would like you to flesh out the essence of who he is.
What would you like out of this? What would you like the photograph to say about you?
Do you find that being a psychic impacts much on your day-to-day life?
I can see this is emotional for you.
Like to, like, get to know the person.
You've only got 10 minutes, right?
I think you're a guy that's put yourself out there. You're not hiding anything. My plan was to find out about whoever it was and to try and get that. And what I learned from him is he's incredibly brave.
It was really intense. Pull this shirt out. Sorry.
I wanted to see the nature of the person, which then present a challenge. How do you portray him as a fisherman?
That's perfect.
He's a self-made millionaire and sort of a little bit intimidating. I wasn't going for a beautiful, nice, perfectly lit portrait.
I just want to try bring out something of who you are. I think that you just treat people like the everyday people, like everybody is.
Pleasure.
Thank you
so much.
I hope I've got that guy's bravery on film.
So it was a very intimidating environment.
So you work.
I like that empty chair next to it too.
Because it's a totally different person.
Almost looks like six different people. So not everything I told you today was true. I'm not a fisherman. I am not an alcoholic. The GFC hit me hard, but I've never been a millionaire. Never been in prison. I am a Bondi lifesaver, but the story we talked about never did happen. Not psychic. Can barely spell it.
Before I knew there were different character pieces, I thought, that's really strange. These don't look like portraits of the character I thought you were. You always got your own preconceptions and you've got your ideas.
It pushed me into a position and a space that I wouldn't normally be in.
You have to dig a lot deeper. I mean, you've got to be, I think you're a lot more creative to work out how you're going to play things.
Now turn to someone and share some ideas. What was the main message in this and what do you think about it? Okay, some of you look like you're still discussing, so I'm sorry that I'm interrupting. Some of you look like, done that, I'm ready. So, what do you think? What was the main message in this video? Yes. Yes, and what does that mean in terms of, you know, meeting new people? Often.
So they become an entirely different person, even in your eyes. And
yeah.
You wonder why you had all these thoughts about this person. You had already categorized them in a certain way, and this
So we do have these categorizations, and that's a fact. And it's okay. It doesn't make you a racist or anything if you have that, because that's how our brain works.
I actually have, first, the other one. This is the neurobasis of an in-group bias. This is a great article because it's a meta-analysis. But it just really shows our brain is wired to have these categorizations, because otherwise we just would not, you know, cope in the world. We have to somehow try to organize the information. Would you like to say anything else about the video before we move on? So not only skills, but also the motivation to trying to see, like you said, that when you get to know the person, then you kind of, so you have to be motivated to get deeper and to become aware. Yes, very good. Yes. Any other comments on the video? I've had some students criticizing and saying that, you know, but, you know, it was a film, you know, he was an actor. So maybe he was acting in a way that the photographers then sort of picked up these elements from his communication and made the picture as it is. But then it's still, then he was reproducing stereotypes about, you know, people who have been in prison or millionaires or whatever. So it's still, you know, around the concept of being aware, is that how do we actually see or perceive people when we have the stereotypes? Often we are not very aware, but we use the stereotypes because we do that all the time. And it's okay, you know, it's not saying that we shouldn't do that. Everybody has stereotypes and we use them all the time. Most of the funniest, you know, comedy is based around stereotypes, if you think about comedy, for example. But why I said that, you know, it's good if you're aware that when you are in an environment like this, it's very easy that you still end up spending time with those people who you think are very similar to you, whether they have the same first language or whether they come from the same village or town, or whether they come from the same country, or whether they are, you know, having similar hobbies. But it is a human nature that similarity and liking, there's a very, very strong correlation. Oftentimes, unfortunately, in programs like these, it is the languages that distribute people. It's those who speak Finnish and then those who speak, I don't know, Chinese, or those who then use English most of the time. And sort of becoming aware, you know, aware of these sort of naturally occurring categories can help you to sort of do things differently, because we are not going to be creative and innovative if we are just always hanging out with people who are very similar. And what we know from research is that if you really want to have an advantage in those networks, is that you are a bridging person. It's called the bridging capital. So when you apply for a job, you can say that, I actually have connections to these really different kinds of communities. When you are bridging two different communities together. So if you all come from same school, you all come from same country or same region, speak the same languages, you are tend to have same networks, similar networks. But if you are the person who can say that, oh, by the way, I know these musicians from there, or I know these ice hockey players from there, suddenly that can be an advantage for you. But you have to be prepared to make the leap and sort of get to know the person behind the stereotype. And why we often are happy with the stereotypes is because it makes our life easy. If we are busy in our everyday lives, I've got my job, I've got my family, I've got my hobbies, I've got everything already. So why should I bother to question my stereotype? We very easily hang around with those people who we consider very similar. So just sort of becoming aware is my aim and goal as well today. So in multilingual and intercultural communication, we need the motivation, the empathy, for example. These are examples from a larger framework. So willingness to step into someone else's shoes is the motivation. Do you want to understand things from a different perspective? And then knowledge. We also have to have knowledge. Knowledge about constructing and negotiating cultural and linguistic identities. What does that mean? It refers to an exercise that I would like you to do next. You can use a pen and a paper if you happen to have one. It's an ancient method that we used to use in the 1990s. But now you can also use the computer or a phone or whatever. You just need to be able to make notes. Okay? And what I would like you to do now is I would like you to write 5 sentences that all start, I am. Let me complete that. And don't worry, you don't have to share them with anyone if you don't want to. So it doesn't have to be this self-constructed ideal me. You ready? No. Don't you know who you are? Be quick. You've got 1 more minute. Go, 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 go. All right. Usually I do this with my students and I ask them to write 20 sentences. So you had the easy version of this. How many of you wrote something about this situation? I am a student. Yes. I am sitting in a lecture. Okay. How about something to do with your personality? I am a shy person. I'm an extrovert. Excellent. What about your nationality? What about family? I am a mother, sister, brother. Yes. What about I'm tired? Yes. So this very quick exercise just illustrates that there are so many different elements that are influencing our communication. It's not only the fact that you were born in a given country. Often in cross-cultural studies, a cross-cultural communication assumes that the country that you're from is the most relevant one when you're communicating. But as we're here, I'm sure that, where are you from? Yes. Finland. So I'm expecting that the fact that you are tired is actually influencing your communication much more right now than the fact that you have a Finnish passport. Yeah. Yes. So kind of also remembering that our identities are also constructed on many things. It's not only the nationality, but also personality or the, you know, family that we are in or the hobbies that we have. And all that can be equally relevant in communication. Not only the country or the culture that we come from. What else? Did some of you have something that was not sort of mentioned in these categories? Did any of you got clever? Like I've done this with philosophy students. This is a stereotype. With philosophy students, I am, or am I really? It's like, ah! Sure. Yes, that's also a way of being. Yes. All right. And then skills. So in addition to these, that knowledge and attitudes, we also need skills. And this is something that you can practice. But remember, in order to learn a skill, it takes 10,000 repetitions to actually learn and master a skill. So next we will practice a little bit on multilingual skills and just give you an idea that what kind of competencies and skills you can use now that you are working in multilingual groups. But don't get frustrated if you don't get everything like this immediately. And I'm sure that many of you are already very skillful. But one of the aims of our whole project in university is to make you aware of the competencies that you already have so that you can verbalize to maybe future employees. What can you do? And one of the aims of this workshop is also that when you now have studied and then you go and work and you can say that I'm graduated from international program, and then, so what? Then you can somehow verbalize. What have you learned? You know, why it is an advantage that you have studied in this kind of program. For the next exercise, I would like you to work in groups of three. And no two, no three. Four, no three. So try to find a group with three persons. And if possible, and if you want to be adventurous, try to find people from different linguistic backgrounds. So you all coming from Finland makes it a bit boring. But of course, you can work like that if you want to. But also, if you want to, challenge yourself a little bit. So it's your chance also to get up and change your seats a little bit, if you want to. Okay, do we have groups of three? One, two, are you working with? Yeah, excellent. Three. You need one member, okay? Who is still without a group? What about you guys? Yeah, I love you. You're like another stereotype, but you're like 20-year-old people in bars go like, come to me. It doesn't work like that. Come on. It doesn't work like that. All right. So where are you? You have a group. Good. What about? Okay. And you still miss one person? And now it... Okay, maybe you want to be adventurous enough and go with... Yeah, they need one. Three. Okay, you're going to go there. Okay, and then three of you. What about you working with them? Three, 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 din, 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 din. That wasn't so difficult. Good. Yes, some of you said that it takes energy to meet new people. This is what you meant, right? You have to move. All right, so now you have to agree which one of you is number one, who's number two, and who is number three. This is not a competition. So just a matter of practicalities. Who is one, who is two, and who is three? Okay. Okay, good. Now, number one, you speak your first language, also your mother tongue or whatever is your first language. Number two, use a third language. So, du kan tala svenska nu, om du är nummer. Okay. So, English. So, then number three, use English. And then the third language is something else than your first language or English. And talk about the weather. Okay, go. Yeah. You're done. Okay. Well, let's take a break now. Just a hint. Often Finns are said to be very crap in small talk. So let's not sort of redo this stereotype, okay? Let's not sort of do this again and again and again. Because when we're meeting a new people, we need to be able to do small talk. We need to be able to start from somewhere. We need to be able to say something. And that's a skill. It is really a skill to talk with, you know, chit chat, have a conversation, and show the other person that you are somehow, you know, maybe not interested in them, but just a sort of, acknowledging that it's a social space that you are sharing. Sometimes it is also very relaxing to be in silence. And that's, you know, that's very, you know, okay. But often that is when you already know each other. So it can be very awkward if you are planning to start a relationship with silence. Of course, you can also try that. It's a challenge, top challenge. But, you know, in communication, we kind of tend to think that it's a skill to chit-chat, to have a conversation and sort of ask questions and carry on a conversation. Because on a relational level, even if you are doing a business meeting, even if Finns aren't stereotypically said that they're very, you know, focus-oriented in business meetings, we don't, you know, chit-chat, we don't do bullshit. But still, there is the relational level. And we also have research that shows that, yes, there is small talk, always, to some extent, because we need to make sure that the relationships are good. Okay, so what happened in your group? Yeah. There you go. Yeah. But you still understood some what he was saying. That's multilingual communication. We often say that, no, I don't speak that language. But actually, if we try, we understand a lot of things. And this is why the multilingual communication, there's a kind of paradigm shift in linguistics, is that we wouldn't be stuck with the idea that I can't say that I understand until I know the language, you know, very well. But even with small repertoires, you can actually communicate with each other. And this is what multilingual skills is all about, is that we would use the, even the couple of words that we know in order to connect. When you start talking business or when you are being an academic expert in your field, obviously then you need a different vocabulary. But just to establish contact, you know, even a couple of words can be very, very, very useful. Yes. Okay, which one of the individuals were did most of the talking? In your group? Was it which number? Yep, number 3, using English. Okay, what about other groups? Yes.
Yes. Apparently, the general consensus between the two is like they were astonished by the language I was speaking in. Apparently, I completely throttled the entire thing. Yeah, bullet train to the entire conversation.
But that's not your interpretation. That's how they saw it. Okay. Okay. Yes. So usually it is the one who speaks English or the first language or the mother. That was your first language that you were using?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? Why is it often the one who is using English or who is using the first language does most of the talking? Yep, exactly. Going back to earlier what we said, that you feel comfortable in using, if you are able to use a language that you feel comfortable, you often also end up talking more. It's power. Language is power. So if you are fluent in one or two or couple of languages and you can use that, it often happens is that you actually take a lot of space. And then the other ones need to tell you that. And this is in multilingual groups and teams. We often end up in situations where it is either the native speaker or the speaker who is the most fluent in that given language are the ones who have more power. But if we look at equalities in teams and if we want them to be, creative so that everybody's voices get heard, we need to somehow be able to tell the person, is that, excuse me? And it's a skill to actually also try to engage everyone. It's a skill to regulate your own communication so that even that you are a fluent one, you sort of interrupt yourself and you ask questions from others. So these are kind of skills that you really need. Let's move on. This time, we have number one, using English. Number two, your first language. And number three, a third language, and talk about your studies. Okay, sorry to interrupt. And their conversation was still ongoing. Good. So what happened this time? Okay, yeah. Brilliant. Yes. Very good. Yeah. This is what is also a multilingual skill, is that you can help those who are just learning the language. And you don't immediately switch into English. Because this is, in Finnish, we would say a bear's favor, karhun palvelus. It's a direct translation. It's not a very good one. It's a bad favor that you do for people who are learning the language, is that you assume that you're being polite when you immediately switch into English, but you're actually doing a bad favor for those who want to learn the language, because then they don't ever practice. And they are also being sort of told that, oh, you are not good in this language, and so thus I'm not going to communicate with you like this. So, you know, it's a skill. It takes a lot of energy, first of all, to start using the little language that you have. But it's a skill that we can listen and be patient and help, because that is what is needed. Thank you for this. Any other, what did you notice when you were doing this exercise this time? Mm-hmm. And any ideas why that was this time? Yep. Yeah. So oftentimes when we start a course in communication, for example, and we always do the, you know, getting to know one another, and everybody says something personal about themselves, and some people find that really boring. And it's like, okay. But it has two functions. First of all, it's about the trust. If we want to learn, if we want to fail gracefully, we need to have trust within our group that we are learning with, so that we can trust that even if I fail, those people don't see me in a bad light. If we want to learn more effectively, then we create trust. And this is what we know from education research. If you want to establish networks, you need to be able to know how to establish relationships. And then trust is really important. So how do you create trust with a person that you know? How do you create the feeling of, oh, I feel safe in this relationship, so I can be more relaxed? So these are all kind of things that are really, really important in terms of, you know, networking, creating relationships. Thank you for this comment. Anything else? Did some of you notice that you were actually breaking the rules and not sticking to your role? What happened? Yes. And that's also a lot of the times if somebody asks in English, then you reply in English. Or someone is using the language that you know, you reply in that language. It's adapting, because it's a skill. We are adapting our communication to others. Some of us are already very good at adapting. For example, you know these people who are able to pick, like, accents? And if they talk with someone, they start, you know, sounding like the other person. And that's a skill. We also know that people who are very good at mimicking other people's accent are very good at selling products to these other people. It's, again, similarity and liking. Imagine if you are about to buy, I don't know, what would be your next purchase? Jeans. I don't know what you need. Jeans. And you go to a shop and then you meet a person who, you know, appears to be very different. They talk with a different dialect and they just behave very differently. Or if they sort of sound like they are from your hometown. This is, you know, studied, and we know that, for example, if you're able to switch your accent, if you can slow or make your pace according to the other person. So if the other one is really quick, you start, you know, talking more quicker, or if they are slow, then you also slow down. It's the similarity and liking. We assume that you are a nice person if you can, you know, copy my communication style. So also that in terms of language, and pasting and dialects, if you're able to adapt your communication, it's a skill. Of course, we have to be ethical with that. Okay, one more round so that all of you have had all these different roles. Now, number one, use a third language. Number two, English. And number three, use your first language. And this time around, discuss about the system dynamic approach to analyzing bioethanol and biodiesel supply chains. As for an example, you can look at the increasing bioethanol and biodiesel market shares in the USA. Go! Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt your, I'm sure, very vivid discussions on the topic. What did you notice this time around? You didn't even know that it says, and I just proved, I didn't, you know, make it up. It's actually from an article. So I just didn't come up with difficult words. Do we have English native speakers here? Okay, yeah, but it's not your sort of first language that. Well, you know, you can, yeah. But could you then have a conversation about this in English? So you know now what they're talking about. Okay, good. Because I wouldn't even, I consider myself quite fluent in English, but I couldn't. I don't know what is the increasing bioethanol and biodiesel market shares in USA. I don't have a clue. So you have to know the content. Yes. So the point is that even if you are a native speaker, if you don't know the language and the content in the specific area, it doesn't make you an expert. This is the thing that we often confuse, that if someone is a native speaker and often it's English, we assume that they also have other kinds of competencies. However, even a native speaker does not necessarily can have a conversation on this unless they don't know the content and the field-specific language. So even that you are, you know, studying different languages and a couple of words can help you on a relational level, if you want to be an academic expert in your field, you have to learn the field-specific language. So just being a native in given language doesn't make you an academic expert. So we all have to learn. It's not that some people have to learn less or others. So any other things that you did notice this time? Yes. Well, I Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yes. And this is exactly in the multilingual. So you activate your repertoires. Even if you don't know that language in a traditional sense, you know words or you know a language that is close enough so you understand. And this is what multilingual communication is all about, is to understand each other, regardless of what is the language. You can mix languages. Previously, it was considered that you shouldn't mix languages because it's bad. But now, if you can mix languages, it's a skill and encouraged also because it enhances the communication. It's just, you have to also practice that and use that sort of a lot of the times. But this is to encourage you also to mix languages. It's okay if somebody uses a couple of words in Finnish or in Swedish or their native language. As long as you understand each other, that's the point, basically. So what we have been sort of practicing here is the ability to use or exploit your plurilingual repertoire, which is exactly what Yuja was describing, is that you kind of understand even that you don't know the language, and then adapt your language in different situations. So also, it's a skill to break down a complicated information, and that's what I said at the beginning, that it's a skill not to speak too a perfect language, but actually make it simple. Simplify what you're saying. Rephrase it so that the others can understand what you want to say. And then be flexible. Ability to manage coexisting in several languages in interaction. That's also a skill. And now that hopefully when you have been able to speak your first languages, it's also, I hope that your master programs will be spaces where your language repertoires will be acknowledged. Oftentimes, it's just considered English, English, English. But then imagine that you are now studying in an environment where you can learn, I don't know, what mother tongues you have? What languages do we have here? You said that, what was your first language? Okay, so you have a possibility to learn a bit of Arabic. Any other languages? Yeah. Imagine if you could say a couple of words Bangla, and then you were doing business with somebody from Bangladesh, and then you were able to say hello to them in your language. Yeah, so in relational level, there's a huge meaning if you can sort of exchange a couple of things in another language. Yep. Okay, ability to exploit interaction for language learning. So you can always learn more. Like you were saying that you were teaching him, what was the concept that you were saying? Digitaalinen. Yes, digitaalista markkinointia. Yes. Digitaalista markkinointia ko. Do you know what that means? Yeah. What does that mean? It's a question then. Yes, you don't have to know all the nuances. As long as you know the words, just putting the words next to each other and people will understand what you mean. That's what I'm saying here. You will be having an academic English courses and it is about writing academic texts. But at the same time, I'm also enhancing you to listen to different dialects, for example. I have a lot of, you know, here, still hear people, my colleagues, people at university coming from a conference and saying that, oh, it was very interesting, but I didn't understand a word from that and that presentation because of their dialect. And I'm thinking, well, is it your problem or is it their problem? Maybe they were using their first language and they are native, but because you are not used to listening to different kinds of dialects, it's not actually their problem, it's your problem, in my opinion. So it is just that what is familiar is what we like. And that's why also familiarity is one of the things, along with similarity, is that we are being drawn to. So let's remember that we use language as a social tool. Sometimes we feel that if somebody is struggling with a language or is not so fluent, it's also a lack of professionalism, or that we very easily say it's cultural. That's something that also I would like you to be aware that whenever you hear yourself explaining that, oh, it's because of the culture, then rethink. Is it really culture? Is it something else? Is it that, you know, you are different paces in working in groups, or your personalities, or the fact that you're, tired or something else? Culture is very easy explanation in many places. We tend to say that, in Finland we do this and that, in Finnish culture. And we can use it strategically. I do it. Every time I'm in a conference and it's like packed, that it's so packed, the program is so packed that I don't even have time to go and have a coffee. Because what I love when I travel is to go on a coffee shop, somewhere, a cafeteria, and just watch people. But if conference is really packed, I don't have time for that. So what I do is I say, I'm from Finland, and in Finland we really appreciate the, quietness, and I can't really, I have to have my privacy. So I hope that you don't mind. I'm going to go into my hotel room and be on my own. What I do is I go in a cafeteria and watch people. So we use the culture as a strategic explanation a lot of the times. But then you can sort of think about, is it really culture, or is it actually something else? Sometimes it is the culture, but then let's try to avoid the huge categorization and stereotypes. We use also, if we think about company language, or it can be also your program language, oftentimes it leads to, if the official language is English, then you kind of use that in many places, but then you have these clusterings. You can have the Finnish-speaking people go and have lunch together, and then they speak Finnish. Or you can have the people who speak Arabic, they, have lunch together and speak Arabic. Because we also need that time when we are able to use those languages that we are very fluent, so that we can feel that we are in power. I know what I'm talking about. But that can lead into this sort of language clustering and thin communication. What is thin communication? It means that the information doesn't flow within the organization. So you guys don't share the knowledge. There is a research, a study that was conducted in Sweden, a university at the Department of English. And can you guess what was the language of power? Context, Sweden, Swedish university, English department, what was the language of power? Nej, det var inte det. No, what else? German, good guess. But we have to go a bit further. It was Mandarin Chinese. Why? Because the head of the department was married to a Chinese researcher, and they were so good at their job that they were able to attract a lot of external funding. And as they were attracting a lot of external funding, they were also able to hire PhD students from China, very, very good students. So they were, attracting more and more money, and they had power because they brought a lot of money into the department. But what happened is during the lunch, they would go and have lunch together, and they would speak in Mandarin Chinese. And while you are having lunch, of course, you talk about, regular stuff, but you also talk about, I read this really interesting article, and maybe we should do this instead of that. And so you also talk about work. And if you didn't speak Mandarin Chinese, you were not part of that conversations. People didn't know that you would have something to offer to that research project. So then that leads to this thin communication that not everybody at the department were not involved. So, having this language repertoire, being aware that what do we do with these language choices, we always include someone, but then at the same time we can be excluding other people. So how can we be multilingual so that everybody can feel included? And this politeness versus power refers to situation is that where we don't help people to learn the language. This is from Böhönen and Kokkonen. Hopefully we'll have time to write about it. We collected data from higher education institutes, people who have worked in Finland for from 2 years to 20 years, and they were, you know, not originally Finnish. And those people who were able to speak Finnish felt that they belonged to the whole society. But then there were a lot of people who felt that I belong to this work community, but I don't belong to Finland, because they didn't speak any Finnish because they never had to. At their workplace, everybody was, you know, always changing into English because it was more quick. So this is a challenge for you. When you are, you know, working in groups, I'm assuming that you do a lot of project work and group work, is that when there is time pressure, when there is pressure for you to perform, is that do you have time to let people to practice the language? Do you have time to include those who would be more quiet because of their language competence or because of their personality or because of something else? And do you have time for relationships? These are the questions that I would like you to sort of think about. Okay, so one more video to kind of conclude the things that we have already talked again and again. So that now we know that our brain organizes information into these groups and categories. So we have to be very aware to break those stereotypes and sort of see that, okay, now I probably see you as a representative of, where are you from? Japan. So I kind of, my brain does the, oh, we have the official representative of Japan. And then I start thinking, okay, what do I know about Japanese people? And then I sort of, you know, go through that. And then if I don't question myself, if I don't reflect my communication, then I don't get to know you as a person. And that's when it all sort of can go wrong. And that's why we have to be aware. So instead of just, you know, going, following that categorization, one thing what we can do is to sort of remember this and remember the similarities. Like I think you said it very well, that, you know, we should get to know the person so that, you know, we know that, you know, okay, you're from Japan, but, you know, what are your hobbies? What is your personality like? And how you communicate with me? Because you can communicate with him very differently than you communicate with me. So we don't know the person until we've actually communicated with them. And I just, this is a bit tacky video, is a bit, you know, but I like it. And I think it would be a good summary for us to wrap the day. So here is a video.
It's easy to put people in boxes. There's us. And there's them, the high earners, and those just getting by, those we trust, and those we try to avoid. There's the new Danes, and those who've always been here, the people from the countryside, and those who've never seen a cow, the religious, and the self-confident. There are those we share something with, and those we don't share anything with.
Velkommen. Jeg kommer til at stille jer nogle spørgsmål i dag. Nogle af dem kan godt være lidt personlige, men jeg håber, I vil svare ærligt på dem. Hvem herinde i rummet var klassens klog? Forældre.
And then suddenly, there's us. We who believe in life after death. We who've seen UFOs. And all of us who love to dance. We who've been bullied. And we who've bullied others. And then there's us, the lucky ones who've had sex this past week. We who are broken-hearted. We who are madly in love. Will you feel lonely? We who are bisexual, and we who acknowledge the courage of others. We who have found the meaning of life, and we who have saved lives. And then there's all of us who just love Denmark. So maybe there's more that brings us together than we think. TV2 Denmark.
Okay, so this is not to say that I go to Denmark. But just to sort of remind you that this is a unique opportunity for you to get to really know people from different backgrounds. Because when you, you know, as I said, when you graduate, when you have work and you have hobbies and you have life and everything, it's seldom time for really to establish your networks. Of course, that can be part of your job. I mean, we've done research with people who have networking as part of their jobs. But I hope that these thoughts about multilingual communication, intercultural competence will help you not only get through your studies, but also when you're applying for jobs to actually verbalize why the master program that you've, you know, gone through as an international master program have given you the extra benefits that, of course, I hope that you do gain during your studies. But at least this is your chance. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of the week. Have a wonderful rest of the week.